there was a bit of a challenging period, because when I went out on maternity and I went back after 3 months, that the big CEO told me, "Ms. Bakri, we love having you here. I want you to still work here, but I sold the company."
Welcome to Unbrand Me, the Brandwagon podcast, where we unpack the stories of founders and brand builders. We go through their journeys, through their life stories, to try and understand how, you know, what they've been through has impacted the brands that they built. And it's always a great story that we uncover. We also believe at Brandwagon that better people make better brands, and better brands make a better world. And you're here because we believe you are one of those. So, Kristen, welcome to the Unbrand Me podcast.
Thank you, Peter. Thank you for inviting me here. It's a pleasure, especially catching up with you and the crew. And thank you for seeing that we're trying to build a brand that makes a better world, because vintage for us is the community and the philanthropical part side of it, with the women empowerment message, is what is mostly at heart for us.
Yeah, and I think you've always been behind, you know, behind the story of Invintage is that message of empowerment, which we're going to unpack at a later stage. But first, I want to go way, way back, okay? So, I mean, who is Crystal? What is the story behind Invintage? But more, what is the story behind Crystal? So I'd love to go back, you know, in your life's journey to see what were the moments, what were the instances in your life that got you here. And you can go as far back as you want, but I want to uncover, you know, the product designer story. When did you get into it? When was the moment you realized there's something in me that I need to express and I need to get out there? So go as far back as you want. And I know your life story has a big impact on what you do.
Yes, I think 3 years of therapy, I got to understand that everything I am today is a little seed that that one sows every year in our lives. And I think it started off at a youngish age. When my parents got separated, my dad had left home, and I very much established the role at home, the breadwinning role. I started working at a very young age.
Okay.
The van used to pick me up at 5:30 in the morning. I used to go to factory and I used to count the papers for copybooks, school copybooks.
Wow.
And I used to finish, used to get home really late, around 5. I don't know how I did it. Because when I look back, especially seeing the generation of today, like, it's unheard of. But I was always a very positive person, and I was always the type that I was brought up to do what needs to be done. And I never questioned, like, this is my circumstances, this is my life, this, you know. I felt always good in a way that if I can do something and solve a problem, it's okay, as long as I have a solution to it. I've always, you know, tried to be a bit creative in solving my situation and in a very positive way. And I managed to get into junior college and university, always had two jobs.
Wow.
In between. Then my first job was in the cosmetic and skincare industry.
Okay.
And there I was into the world of branding. So one step back, I loved art.
Studied art?
I used to study art.
Okay.
I used to go to the School of Arts. But when I was in sixth form, my mom was always like, listen, arts are not going to take you anywhere. You're not going to make money with art. So just, she took me to the school counselor and she's like, you have to choose subjects which make money. And I took business, basically. I did management and public policy. I was meant to become a politician or something.
Wow. Thank God you didn't.
No, actually, I don't know why, because I never wanted to do politics, and politics is really not me. But I like the real politics, mm-hmm. not what politics
what
is.
What politics has become.
So when I went out of uni, I was trying to find something which interests me, which I could do, but, you know, like, it was really hard, I remember, finding a job. And I told my boss, I told her, listen, why wouldn't anyone give me a chance? If don't let me show you what I can do, how can you know that I'm not good for this mm-hmm. job? And she said, okay, we might have a position, you know, for stock keeping and stocks. I said, good. She said, after 6 months, we'll review your contract. And actually, that's where I learned how to create stock codes, which we still use. The format is still used until today.
Oh, wow. That's something you brought back with you from that experience.
Everything. And then from there, I was put into the words of the designer brands, the luxury designer brands, and how they market their products and how difficult it is to try to sell a lipstick or a skincare product, because people can't really, you know, how are you going to sell it? So you have to really sell the story of it. And that was my first branding experience, which for me was amazing. I was really in awe of everything, and which I still carry, and I still love it when I see an advert of one of these luxury brands. I'd be like, wow, you know, like a little girl. And from there, I moved into the watches and jewelry business, mostly watches. I used to import most of the designer brands in Malta and distribute to the stores, and we had our own retail.
This was you yourself?
Yes.
Or you
working? After okay. No, I used to work with somebody
else.
You're
working with somebody, okay.
Another company, my second work experience. And from there, I learned retail. And I learned also the watch and jewelry business was very weak on marketing, mm-hmm. but then stronger on the retail side. So there mm-hmm. I learned another aspect of the yeah. business. Then...
So that is, when we talk about the retail side, the importance of sales techniques, the importance of understanding your customers, they walk through the door and getting them through
yes.
the whole...
Retail is a mathematical formula. So basically, everything needs to be mathematically worked out, like the cost of your stuff, the cost of your rent, the cost... you have to cost every single display, how much money it's making you, so that you can repurchase more of what is selling and less from what is not. The stock movements from one outlet to the other, that is a whole...
It's a science unto itself.
On its own, because obviously, and it's very, very difficult to make money from retail. And if you don't get all your numbers right, it's...
Yeah, it's make or break.
Mm-hmm. It's very easy to have a bad year or to have bad years if you don't get it right.
Well, you clearly learned your lessons over the years. Sorry, I interrupted you.
No, fine.
It's so exciting to listen to the story.
So I went from marketing and then after a couple of years, about 4 years, I was pregnant with Francesca. And there was a bit of a challenging period, because when I went out on maternity and I went back after 3 months, the big CEO told me, "Bakri, we love having you here. I want you to still work here, but I sold the company."
Oh.
And these were literally my babies. I used to live for them. I was so committed to my job, and I had issues in my pregnancies as well. And I had growth retardation with Francesca. The doctor really wanted me to slow down. And, you know, I was in the morning, I had gotten some agents to market visit. Then I dropped them to the airport again. In the meantime, before going to pick them up from the airport, I had gone to hospital to do a scan. Then went again after I dropped them off to the airport again. At 5, I was at the doctor, and he told me, "No, listen, you can't keep living like this. Grab your bag and go to the hospital now."
Wow.
With the shock of him trying to stop me, I crashed twice whilst I got to the time I got home. And I'm telling you, I'm not the type of person that my brain works so fast that if you try to stop me, that is actually the worst thing you can do to me, because it will go even faster. It will start trying to find a way of doing something.
To make it work. Because the laws of gravity don't work for Crystal.
In fact, that's
what happened.
You're
quite an unstoppable force, eh?
Yes, unfortunately.
Well, I don't think it's unfortunately. I think it's a great asset. Sure, it can get you into some crashes, but...
The thing is that... Your body and your mind, they work, they don't, my body and my mind don't really communicate very well. They're very...
So my body... Not in sync 100%.
Exactly. Okay. My body is like, "Chris, stop. And my mind is like, no, we can do this. So, you know, there's conflict.
And who normally wins?
My mind.
Your mind.
My mind is too strong for my body.
Well, I was at the Pilates session this morning. We were having a conversation about the power of the mind. And in reality, the mind is one of the most powerful muscles, but it's extremely hard to train. And once you train it, you know, practice makes permanent. So if we get ourselves into these loops, then to untrain that and to change those are really, really hard.
It's true. It's a muscle which... I think the brain, from various aspects, the brain, once you build that muscle, you can't just say, I'm not going to practice it anymore, because it keeps thinking on its own, even at night, if it wants to. On the other end, the brain, unless controlled when you're doing the entrepreneurial job, can be very, very dangerous, because it can push you into seeing things from the wrong, from the perspectives which are not healthy. Mm-hmm. Because entrepreneurship is like going up a mountain. And obviously, if the brain is looking down, it's going to create anxiety, it's going to create tension, stress, which will then lead into making bad decisions. And when you're, like, entrepreneurship for me is like a race sometimes, I feel. It's all about stamina. It's about how many, it's not about how many times you're going to fall on the floor, because that you have to learn how to do. I slip six, seven times a day. Sometimes I do a mistake enough, which costs me enough. In the last time, I got a fine. And I said, actually, this is the cheapest mistake I've done today. You know, and I said, like, positive thinking, Cree, move on.
Fantastic. That's a really good positive thinking technique.
Yes. Always find the positive in everything. And always try to learn a lesson from everything you know. Because if you do a mistake and you learn from it, it could actually be your cheapest mistake.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we were back
to pregnancy. Getting into hospital, supposed
to have. I had my laptop under my bed. I used to see the doctor coming, and I used to close it quickly and put it under my bed again. And but after, when I went back, the company was gone. And I felt a bit, you know, like, I don't blame anyone, because I know it's a cultural thing, and I know that the directors loved me and they still have a lot of respect for me today. But when a woman gets married, there, especially 11 years ago, there was the stigma that she's going to get married, so now we might stop thinking of investing in that person, and, you know, then she's going to have babies, so she's going to leave, and, you know, it's not worth investing in that person. And I feel that the people around me failed to see that there was more to me than just being a mother, and I couldn't be the mother only, because I felt it was not doing just that did not bring the best out of Kristin. Mm-hmm. I think every person needs to first be good with herself to be a better person for all the people around you.
Absolutely.
To being a good mother, a good wife, a good daughter, a good sister, a good friend. Which sometimes you feel that you're failing everybody, and a good boss at work, which is for me one of the top priorities. When I felt that I got into literally a point in my life where I could see just doors, and it had never happened to me before. Obviously your priorities change, because somebody's life is depending on you. So somehow you can't just go to work and ignore all that.
Of course not.
I wasn't happy doing that. I was helping out on the online business, setting up the website. I was a very practical person, and I was managing quite well, but it wasn't giving me the satisfaction, because what I liked to do is create brands, work with brands, market brands, sell the brands. I was a brand manager. I managed brands. That's what I knew how to do. And, you know, like, I also used to say to myself, Cree, there's a lot of things I'm capable of doing. And there was one of the directors that used to joke and used to tell me, he used to laugh at me and she said, stick at what you know how to do.
Stay in your lane.
Exactly. Stay in your lane. Like, this is why when I used to go, even simply, then I used to say, maybe to get to extremes, if I used to go to the butcher, I never used to choose my meat, because I felt like that's not something I know how to do.
Wow, so it had really conditioned you to a
yes,
point where
you... Yes, and I still
am
like that. If I don't know how to do it, don't do it yourself, because you'll fail. Then you'll feel, you know, it has, and I'm very honest with my employees. I try to see as well what they're good at, because I'm always scared. If I push them into something that does not bring out the best of them, mm-hmm. it can push them into a failure, which then will affect their confidence. Mm-hmm. And this is part of the empowerment message, which we tried to even build within the culture of the company.
Kristin, I want to challenge you on that, okay? Because mm-hmm. the person I see in front of me does not look like the type of person who stays in her lane. Now, I understand that what you're saying is like, okay, you know, if you do something really well, keep on doing that. If you don't do something very well, I struggle with the feeling that somebody has to tell me what I'm good at and what I'm not. Because if I believe that I can achieve, I might fall flat on my face, but at least I tried. And I think that you are a testament to you staying in your lane could have been, I'll remain a brand manager for the rest of my life. And theoretically, you are probably a glorified brand manager of your own brand. But I mean, what you have managed to do from a business perspective, from an entrepreneurial perspective, from a product perspective, because the products that you create are absolutely beautiful and you've got an extreme amount of loyal customers behind you who passionately come back and keep coming back. And you've built, you know, a business which is moving also out of your lane, because you're moving from jewelry into gin, which is your latest creation, into bags, into sunglasses. So is it really about staying in your lane, or is it also about pushing the boundaries? Tell me, let's understand this.
No, I did stay in my lane because what I do, I'm creating the brand.
Okay.
I'm creating this community around vintage, and I'm trying to get people to understand more that vintage is not just a jewelry brand, but it's a community, it's a lifestyle, it's people getting together and trying to change, break these
walls
in the culture that really need to be broken down and for us to be all able to move on. Yes, I do. Crystal is capable of building the website, like Crystal is capable of managing the retail, Crystal is capable of designing a shop, but it's not my best. Mm-hmm. Then it takes a lot of effort. So what I do, I spend quite some time on all these, but I establish processes. I establish the ways that we want to go about it. So to be able, because I'm the person that has a good visibility of all the aspects of the company, mm-hmm. and I know how they all come in together. So I need to come in two stages to make sure that everybody is in sync and everybody is in is working in synergy together. And that does not mean that if I go, for example, we were speaking about the marketing. If I have somebody doing marketing at the office, that does not mean that I will go in and I tell him, listen, today do this. And see, sometimes they come and they tell me, listen, which image do you like best? And I feel bad because I feel like this guy has gone, done so much work to get to this point. And now he's trying to, I know they try to involve, but I feel bad taking that spotlight for him because I feel like he should be the one. And I always say, which one do you think is best? Because you have a better eye than mm-hmm. me on this.
Okay, so now I'm understanding what you're saying. So I think staying in your lane, in this case, you particularly meaning like if you're phenomenal at something, don't try and get into other things. Or other than that, if you're great at doing this, don't tap into somebody else's experience and expertise. Ansi, surround yourself with people who are amazing better than you with different things, and get them to excel in that.
What I am, though, I feel and I try to be, is a team player. Like we're going to Black Friday, Cyber Monday, so we're very busy with online packing. I went in the morning, tell me, what do you need me to do? Yesterday I was packing some boxes, you know, because they needed to be done because mm-hmm. we fell a bit. So I don't mind, and I actually enjoy it.
Yeah.
You know, like...
You clearly enjoy it, because as you started to talk about this, you have this sense of pride in your face.
Yes.
Which is really interesting to still see after 11 years of doing this.
I love doing the simple tasks. Because then I can have a coffee, I can have a chat while I'm doing it. When I'm back into my office, then I'm like, the brain will be sparking with so many things I'm trying to manage at a time. So, yes, and this is the most I miss, actually. Because when you grow, you miss not being in the shops. You miss not being in contact with the clients. When I try to go, I don't know where stuff is. So I look like an idiot, you know. I try to open all the drawers to find something. And then people say, dita hal hanout.
So just in brackets as an example to this is, I mean, you know, Martin's here looking on and he'll probably going to burst out laughing about this, but... You know, I remember setting the server up at the office, and that's definitely out of my comfort zone. Okay, I'm a university dropout. I left university in first year and I never went back. I never studied technology. The truth is that when you set up your own business, you have to do everything. I remember taking off paper clips from the letters I used to get to save them and put them aside. So sustainability was always at our core, but it was also saving money. But recently, I needed to get back into the server to access some files. I never get into the server. I don't need to get into the server. You know, I've got an amazing team of people who do the job better than I do. But I felt like really useless because I don't even know what my password is to get into the server. So yes, I get you. And I know that feeling of looking like a
It gives me a bit of anxiety. Like,
Yeah, but then again, I have confidence in the team. I have confidence in the processes that we built, in the philosophies that we've created. And I mean, I've been to your store before. I am your typical perfect male client who comes at the last minute, who doesn't understand what he's buying, and you can sell him anything. Yes, I recognize that customer persona. You're welcome.
We actually have days when you, like 24 Christmas December Eve, in the morning, the retail manager Friday. Tells everyone, guys, it's the 24th, don't forget. The today is the men's in. Day. They're coming, everybody's clueless. You have to tell them what to get, or else they're going to be there for ages or walk out without a bag.
But coming back on that, the processes are in line, because you know your people can see, they can see through me. They know exactly what to do. They know exactly how to sell it. But even recently, I had actually an issue with a piece of jewelry that we bought from you, and your team immediately like resolved it. I walked in there with like, let's see what's going to happen about this. Because you know how it is, you walk into a store and you're like, scared. What's the customer service going to be like? Because selling is great, but then, you know, what happens in the tough times? I was impressed, and I'm not telling you this just because on this podcast, but I really was impressed. I actually called, you know, my wife and said, you know, that was sorted like in no time. It took me longer to park than to resolve this, you know, which...
Thank you, Peter. So well done. Except by you.
No, honestly, but I mean, I mean, who am I to say it? I'm not, you know, the expert in the industry, but I'm a client.
You're into brands, so...
No, well done, honestly, 10 points. I feel like we took a left turn when we're still... Have you given birth yet at this point in time or not?
Yes, I did. Okay. I did. I went back to work and the company was gone. So I'm left with this daughter, and I felt like a bit at work I wasn't getting my satisfaction. I lost the branding side and the sales side. And that was a turning point in my life, because I felt if I leave, I'm going to be unemployable. Because nobody's going to recruit a woman who just had a child. So there was, I think, one of the hardest times of my life. Because also I was quite young. I was 28. I got married at 25. He was 28, and I'm like, I didn't know. You know, you still don't exactly know who you are. What now? I have everything clear in my head. You know, it's more gonna be 40 next month, so there's a difference. Yeah. I'm not looking forward to the next stage, but. So what I was looking at her, and I really want to give her, I really want to do something to make the world better for her. I don't want her to go through what I was going through. And out of that massive desperation of everything, I said, I sort of art was something, you know, you used to express yourself with creatives. They draw to bring out a lot of feeling and everything. And that was the point where suddenly my brain connected all the dots. And I started designing jewelry. I came up with the idea of designing the jewelry, which was a niche. My previous company, we used to sell a lot of watches, but we didn't used to sell a lot of jewelry. Jewelry was not the main. Mm-hmm. Because at that point in time, 10 years ago, brands like the big luxury brands, they were doing these logomania and very few pieces. The big collections were watches. And it was all about having a statement logo on your necklace. It was very limited.
Yeah.
The way they used to work the jewelry as well was not very practical. It was not for day-to-day use in most brands. So there I saw a niche. I saw a niche where maybe I can design a jewelry brand, which I started, that can, you know, and I started working on this woman in part, that for people to be able to express to speak more about who they are, to feel more confident about who they are. Because obviously wearing jewelry and wearing statement pieces, you know, makes you feel good and makes you feel like you can conquer anything in your day. And I wanted to help other women who were also probably entrapped like me, felt like they needed to scream and say, you know, and get out of this day-to-day that... And I feel that still until today, a lot of women take the part in their life, like the part that they take is not because they stop and think, what is it that I want? We take a part which culture, sort of the society puts on us. Like, I didn't even think twice about getting married. I didn't enough. I could have maybe lived with my partner for longer, or, you know, it was so automatic. Mm-hmm. Then we had to have kids. Then it was like, I don't know. I don't feel like maybe I thought, and you're still young. So you don't even, you think that society knows what's best for you. Mm-hmm. You don't, these are not things that...
You should challenge or you give yourself permission to challenge, quasi.
No, I feel like I'm a person that really challenges everything. I'm annoying at how much I challenge and it everything. In my head, I say, why do I have to question everything? Is there possibly a way we can do this better? Or, you know, like, Easter, I keep doing it all the time. And I say, that how did I let all this happen to me without putting enough? Because this is your life.
Absolutely.
How do people go through their 20s and they don't stop? And I still see the young ones and I feel really sorry for them. They don't stop and think as well in the smallest of the detail. Sometimes, you know, like, for example, my mother used to really, because she used to tell me, Madonna, your hours. And I used to take work home. Because I was the type of person that if my boss used to tell me, listen, we need to do this, I used to try to figure out how to do it in the best possible way so that the next time I know how to do it and I know how to do it even better, possibly even better than she gave it to me. So, and I used to not stop working on it, even if it was up till midnight. I used to be there in the kitchen table while they're watching television, trying to figure out how to do it. So I am confident in myself that I can do that job. But I didn't used to see, I'm doing this to do a favor to my boss. I used to see this as something which, if I manage, if I embrace it and I can do it, it is something that I'm learning and is the biggest thing that I can give, you can give me. And paying me to train me to get to something, I used to see it to my benefit.
Absolutely, of course.
Today, it's no longer the same. No. And I feel sorry for them because the company is my heart. I say to myself, I'm my 40s. In one way or another, I always had this thing. Cree, if you don't manage to pass through the door, you'll pass through the window. And if not, you will break a canton, brasek. In Maltese, I say it, it sounds better. You know, you break a brick with your head until you open that freaking pathway and you get into the room. But one way or another, there's always a way in.
I'm smiling here because Brandwagon, we have three principles. And you've mentioned two of them, and it's like, you know, it's like it feels like you've been indoctrinated by the stuff, because one is challenge everything. Like, we feel like we're in this place to constantly ask the right questions and to figure out better ways to get stuff done. So your challenge everything comment to me was like, boom, smile on my face. Your second one, which is our third one, is find a way. And whether it is through the door or whether you're going to smash through with your forehead, I think it's a key. But I think what's interesting about this is that,
you know, so missing one.
I'll tell you the other one later. I won't say it then. What I'm seeing here, and I'm really grateful for having been pushed by my colleagues to start this podcast, because I'm studying entrepreneurs by doing this. And there's such a pattern of creatives coming together to break down walls that have been set by others, to see things that they can fix, to look at problems that they can discover on how to fix in a much, much better way, and to just plow through and to collect an army of passionate people who follow their leadership. Because I think that's the thing. And to compare yourself to others and say, like, you know, people aren't like us because they don't get the training. You know, you obviously see it as a massive learn. You have clearly a growth mindset. Yeah. And every single, like, mention that you've, every single instance in your life has just, you know, powered you up and lifted you up, and you've taken that and you've taken it into, you know, to creating this business which is extremely successful. A lot of people are jealous of you. Have a lot of people trying to copy what you're doing, which I think is, you know, flattering in a way, frustrating for most days, you know. But again, I mean, you know, big kudos to you.
Thank
in
you.
A roundabout way.
Thanks. Yeah, I think this is very important that people, because sometimes we see just the nice outside, the nice, as we were speaking before, the world taking, it's not like, it's not, that is, I'm very grateful for them, but there is a lot of hard work, there's a lot of struggle, there's a lot, and I think, yes, the fact that I've always, from my first experience, when I used to go, and I used to count the copy books, I remember I used to think, how can we make this process faster?
Yeah, process improvement, hey, there you go.
And one thing I said to myself when I was working there, I said, like, oh my God, Cree, you have to get your qualifications. You need to study. Because I was one type of person that at school, in my secondary, I never passed an English, a Maltese, or a maths test. I was...
Clearly, it made no difference.
I remember the English teachers. I don't want to say her name. The kids were in class, and she told them, we're doing our levels, and they were like, oh, you think you're going to pass? You know, we're really scared. And she's like, because if you don't pass your English O level, like you're English speaking, you know, like it's impossible, Sacred Heart kids, you don't pass in your English exam. And she stopped and she looked at me in front of everyone. She said, actually, there might be someone I used to speak Maltese at school. Like we were Maltese speaking at home. Yeah. And she said, actually, there might be someone who I don't have my hopes of passing.
How kind.
Very.
The educational system, and that's something else we could fix, but let's not tap into that today.
Here comes another schism of mine. I never replied back in any way. Not when that English teacher, you know, tried to put me down. Not when, enough, maybe there was a male colleague which tried to prove that he's better than me just because I'm a woman. Or enough, someone who tries to break the brand because they want to. They feel that, I don't know what they think. But I always say to myself, focus, keep your focus and prove to people with your actions. Words are meaningless.
Yeah.
My ex-boss, one of my mentors as well, used to always tell me, Kri, in business, I don't know, how do you stay so calm? And he has a very good reputation. Like he's one of the biggest gentlemen I know in business. He's telling me, you have to learn how to always be the bigger person. Like in my system, I'm having a meeting and they're, you know, like it's obvious they're lying to me in my face. They're not going to pay me for the stock per exemple. They're not going to follow this payment plan. They're not going to, he's like, always be the bigger person. And I used to tell you one thing, your word is the most important thing ever in business. It's not about any papers that we sign. So make sure that is always you always respect that and you respect the people you do business with. And that is something that led me, it drives me a lot to the person I am today.
Yeah, clearly.
As no matter how much challenging things can be, and sometimes you feel like breaking everything, you know, like, and you can't let the rage or something of a small situation consume you because it's only 5% in reality of the whole picture. You need to always focus on the 90.
Mm-hmm. Which. Well, thanks for that. I mean, I remember my dad used to tell me this, always be the bigger person. I think I should, I'm glad you repeated it. I should remember it a bit more. Note to self.
The facts speak for themselves in the end, Peter.
Yeah, they do, absolutely. We're getting very close, believe it or not. We've already been half an hour into this podcast and I feel like we're still getting to the point. I might have to do episode 2 on this. I mean, you're the first person we're going to have to do episode 2 on, but I really want to tap into something that you mentioned before about success. So the roads to success is full of ups and downs, and it's full of, you know, maybe sliding tackles. And you got to yourself to you know, this point where you've built an extremely recognizable brand, a brand that is followed, and you have a lot of loyal customers who love what you do. You're very true to your spirit of, you know, building empowerment in that brand. And yet we've got to a point where obviously you're working in a highly competitive state, you know. What is it that puts you and sets you apart? You know, that you always say, like, listen, you know, there are others and they can, you know, continue to try and compete in our market. But what puts you ahead? Like, what is your promise to your customers with the brand that you've built? Besides the empowerment, which is clear because that expression comes out. What is it that you give to your customers?
Mela, first of all, for me, the road to success is not is about the stamina. No matter how many times you fall into your face, how fast you get back up. That it's because there's no, it's obviously you're going to get face slapped every 5 minutes, but how fast you get to get back on track and keep going. Secondly, yes, and this was one of the biggest challenges that I had to face, Nasip, throughout my career. And because I see in vintage and in my eyes, obviously because I know my brand more than anyone else, there's a very big difference to what we do to what other competitors do on the market. First of all, I've been designing the products for the past, and I've been in the jewelry business for a number of years now. Okay, maybe we shouldn't mention it, but I shouldn't keep going on this age thing. But obviously, I am very meticulous from the sourcing of the stones, the sourcing of the metal, how the stone is set, the use of semi-precious material, how we plate the product, the process of the product, the process of the plating of the product, which is also very important. So there are a number of elements. The hand painting of the enamel, the suppliers that we use. I choose suppliers and I work, and I've been in a relationship for the past 10 years with different expertise in different areas. And I understand that people have different qualities, and I want to work with the people who, with different people who excel in what they do and who have a passion for what they do. One day I'll tell you the story of how I found my first factory, because nobody wanted to work with me. And because the quantities in the beginning are very, very slow and very small. And so one is the quality. For me, I see it the way, you know, there's a very different setting a stone with clothes, or how I set it, thinking of this woman is going to wear it every day. I have to make sure that after sales should be close to zero. Obviously, everything is handmade, so there is a percentage which is an acceptable rate of people coming in and say, my stone fell off, but I try as much as possible focus on getting that to a zero.
Yeah, of course.
Secondly, is the message. Today, and as from day one, actually, the message was not just selling and designing the jewelry. The message was always on the building the community. Today, the marketing team, for example, together with the digital team, the advertising team, we have a team which works a lot on the philanthropical. The culmination of this is the Women of the Year event as well, which we do in October, where we have a very strong community power. Today we have over 73,000 active followers on our social media, where people, and we try as much as possible to make them feel like a bit like the hair salon, you know, when you come in, you feel like you're at home, you can say whatever you want, you feel yeah. Welcome, you feel you can be yourself. And we try to help customers into being more themselves and getting that confidence in feeling like I was feeling, you know, like you can all have a bad day. So if you want to come in and we can help you choose something you're happy with, you know, a bit of retail therapy. If you want to make people happy, someone said you have to be selling ice cream. But we try as much as possible, you know, to make people happy in the way we know how to do it. And the only way I knew how to do it was through my art, the branding, which I put together, and the need to do something for my daughter, which was then the woman empowerment message, which I was experiencing myself, because I really wanted her not to ever have to go through what I went through. I wanted people to see her for what she is, people to appreciate her contribution, not because she's for her sex, nothing of that, but because of her brain. I think the brain is such a beautiful, can be so vicious. So many women have so much to contribute in our society, and they can do so much more. If we give them, and one of the messages, for example, mentioned positivity, my biggest supporters are men. Men are huge. They are very important. I think the men in our society are not the ones that are holding women back, but it's actually us, ourselves, because we're so into this. Mm-hmm. Our brain is so set in certain things, and that's why I mentioned also, like, maybe how I got in my 20s, how I went into an automatic mode. Like, we don't question things. And sometimes maybe this is also has a lot to do, I've learned today, to our happiness. Mm-hmm. We are stuck, because I read a lot of people, I'm into a lot of communities on social media, and I read a lot about women, how they feel at their emotional text. And I realize that as we are sometimes entrapped into a situation which we are unhappy about, but we don't do anything about it, or what's even worse, we accept it or try to fix it at times. But there is a limit to what we can fix. Like, we can't fix the people who pull us down. Mm-hmm. That is not the battle we have to be fighting. The battle we should be fighting is to retrieving our happiness and to believing into our, which will help us gain the confidence in ourselves. And this is what Envintage is trying to do in a positive way by putting up the stories of these women who have gone through so much. They're human, you know, as well.
Of course.
They are the women that managed to get out of these. They actually abandoned all. They broke all the stigmas in society and actually stood on their feet and fought for what they believed in. And it's incredible because so many things are against us. Mm-hmm. But yet, you know, they didn't even see that. They focused on what they wanted to achieve.
Yeah, because this, it was the most important thing for them.
And this is what Envintage is about. And this is what we try to do. It is the culture. We are not just a brand that is just designing jewelry. We are a brand that is creating... We're trying to pass a message. We want to be our... We are part of this community. We try to help as much as possible and give back to the community. And like a place where people feel safe, they feel accepted, and where we try to empower everybody into believing more into themselves.
Wow.
It's a lot in it, eh?
It's a lot, but I think it's really powerful because, you know, I'm in and out of boardrooms doing workshops and discovery sessions with clients, and it's not often that you get somebody who understands with such clarity, you know, the role that that brand plays in the mind and in the heart of its community, of its customers. And whilst, you know, competition is going to come and go, and competition will sometimes be up and sometimes be down, the bond that you create with your customers, so long as you really stick to the value and you stick to your promise, your brand promise to your customers, I think that bond is unbreakable.
Yes.
And I think it's clear, because if there was a brand, and the reason why you're here is not because, you know, we're just looking for people who can we interview. You know, the truth is you're here because we believe that everything you've done over the last 11 years is extremely clear that you're really trying to support that cause. You're really trying to support that purpose. And big kudos to you. But also I wanted to, I mean, even in your advertising, so even the message that's coming through is really, really strong. To add on to that sort of, you know, gender empowerment, okay? And I don't even believe it's just based on gender, because I think it's also about, you know, breaking through the norms, breaking through, you know, what society has been for decades and decades and centuries, mm-hmm. you know, putting us in, to quote back, in our lanes, you know, and allowing ourselves, giving ourselves the permission to break away from what was accepted and as the norm to being what should be the better way. There's also another element which I see, which we haven't mentioned, is the fact that I'm not the expert here, but in a lot of the work that you create, your art pieces, your jewelry, there's a lot of Malta in there.
Yes.
And that is something that you haven't mentioned yet. But to me, it's like, I mean, I keep on getting impressed and also surprised in a good way of how many different elements and how many times you remind us locals of the beauty of our country.
Thanks for mentioning it, because when I started, there was no appreciation for it. Today, everybody wants it and everybody wants to
do it. Tries to own it, yes.
Competition, whatever you want to call it.
What's that? Talk to me about that love for your country.
Yeah, and I know, like an artist gets inspired from everything which is around him. So obviously, I got my inspiration. I am very patriotic, very patriotic. And Kikutaf, how much it hurts me when I read comments on social media where say, like, go back to your country, or why do you want to stay in Malta, or don't come here, it's a jungle. It breaks me, because I love this island, and everywhere I go, I'm always looking forward to come back. Yes, there's a lot of wrong, but there's a lot of good. And I think one of the good things is the community.
Mm-hmm.
But also the history. I love the history. I mean, I go to Valletta, this is my, or to all these places, I'm Dina born. I go everywhere and I'm just staring at, I'll be in seventh heaven. I get how beautiful our country is and how much we don't appreciate it.
Yeah, it's true.
So we started working on these little elements, which like we did Habata, like we did Munita, we did so much El Muftih. We work with Joan of the Notorial Archives, and we tried to, that was really amazing. We got notarial documents, and we try to create elements from each and every document and put a calligraphy.
Wow.
And today the sigil is based on that. Old notarial the notary documents of the past. A cavalier, which we created, which we did with, combined with then with the sports community. There's a lot of communities that needs a lot of attention.
Course.
Once I started this, the women empowerment, then it created so many. Now I feel like I say to myself, love is love. You know, like, it's not just loving the community. It's open. We're open to everyone.
Mm-hmm.
We're doing a lot of work, even with these. There's a lot of small niche groups. But back to Malta, yes, I find, for example, it's so fascinating. The Maltese cross is so fascinating. The doors, the knockers, everything is. So obviously, I got a lot of inspiration from there. But what we did as a brand, which was different, and which we were one of the first in the whole world to do, we started creating interchangeability. Why? Because of sustainability and because of accessibility from the customer. I didn't want to create a brand which people couldn't afford.
Mm-hmm.
So what we did, we started separating the pendant, for example, from the chain. So if you have the chain, you don't need to buy the pendant. And maybe next time you can afford just the pendant, you don't need. It makes it cheaper for
of
you
course.
To. We started creating rings with interchangeable stones and elements. So if you want a new bracelet, you just change the color of your stone. We started creating earrings with the pendants going, you can exchange the pendant. So then we went with the twist, the big necklace with the... Sometimes I'm like, what? I didn't wear anything today. It's really unfair. So we took that and then put in a lot of other elements to it as well. And we were one of the first ones in the world to do that. Today, some of the biggest brands, you see how all these brands are following? It's like, do you realize that we were the first, like our clasp, for example? Then we started getting into stackability. So in the morning you want to wear a pendant and you want to look more simple. And then in the evening you want more of a statement piece. So we actually designed a clasp which opens and you can stack the different pendants on top. So one pendant fits very nicely on top of the other, like everything designed to perfection, of course, because the measurements in jewelry, even half a millimeter makes the whole difference.
In terms of balance, in terms of symmetry, in terms of
the
way everything
stacks
up.
They won't fit properly.
Mm-hmm.
Even like a stone, you need a millimeter on each side to fit the claw. So you need to really, in the design, have everything. Every half of a millimeter needs to be estimated well.
You're a very, very passionate person. Huh? I'm really enjoying this conversation. You know, just watching you get into the details. And you know, like the way you embrace the craft and you embrace the art. It's really fascinating.
I'm lucky because... with Envintage, I got to do. I said, look, if you're doing this, Cree, make sure that you do something which you really love this time. It's like you have a blank canvas. This is a one shot you have to make something which you will be happy with doing, because this is the only thing you're gonna have. And I think if people don't find their lane, the stamina to keep going for a number of years gets very, very hard. And even for people like me who've managed to find and to design their own canvas, to do their own painting, even for me it gets difficult sometimes, because social media, as much as it's good, has its own schism as well. I get criticized a lot and I get compared to other brands which I feel is very unjust, because in my eyes there would be no comparison. But I'm always open, very open-minded, and I try every... I always say to my employees, let's be grateful to the people who criticize us, because those are the people who will teach us how to improve. And they will show us other aspects which we are possibly not seeing, and on which we can use as opportunities on to investing and to become a better brand. So...
yeah, it's a great place to pause. We're into 50 minutes. We said we're going to try for 45.
Okay.
The passion you have is unique. The learnings and the wisdom that you bring out through the lessons that you've learned is fascinating. I'm sure that there's going to be a lot of people who are going to be really probably listening to this and then listening to it again just to take notes. So I really appreciate how how generous you've been with your time. I know that you do a lot in terms of, you know, being generous. It's not only, you know, the causes that you support, but also in terms of helping people and mentoring and giving advice whenever they need it. So I can't wait to see what's going to happen over the next 11 years, even though I know sometimes we feel, oh my God, I can see your deep breath there. I think I'm excited to see where this is going
to
go.
I'm very happy to share because entrepreneurs, you mentioned it, have a very lonely journey because a lot of people fail to understand them and fail to see possibly the vision and that they have. Because everybody sees the state you are now. Mm-hmm. We're people that can see longer. We find a cause and we're focused on it. You know, we always try, and from the morning, to work on motivating the people around us. But the question sometimes, which is, and I do, who motivates us?
Yeah.
And entrepreneurs are the people that need to find their own motivation. You know what I mean? Nobody's going to tell
you.
I know
exactly what you mean.
So this is why I'm very happy to share. And sometimes listening to other people's stories is relieving in a way, because you understand that you're not alone in this. There are your species, you know, like sometimes it's true. I'm hearing to one of my species podcast because I enjoy hearing somebody say,
we are the uncommon amongst the uncommon.
And or putting clarity to a feeling. Sometimes you have a feeling and you don't even know, you can't even, you know, yeah. Like you don't even know what you're going through, but that's what it is.
That's exactly what it is, yes. No, I think, and this is the whole reason behind the Unbrand Me podcast, no? Because it is a lonely journey. It is, you know, way more, you know, let's call it interesting as opposed to saying tough than many people see. Because, you know, outside it's all glitter and gold. But inside, you know, there is a lot of, and kudos to the people who stick with us and support us. And there are many of those because they sometimes get to see the real journey. I want to ask you one last question. It's normally the toughest question that we ask on this podcast, but it's a quick question, so don't worry. And also, again, I really want to thank you for being so generous with what you shared, but also with your time, because I know how busy you are. But the question is...
Thank you for organizing, because I know this could do a lot of good to a lot of people.
I'm grateful to have the opportunity, honestly. I feel it's a really good cause. If we had to make a film about you and you had to have a soundtrack right now, right here, is there one particular song that you could say, this is me? Or this is a song that's going to be, you know, playing through my
Rocky.
Yes. Fantastic.
Because sometimes when I'm like, hey, I like... when I'm joking at home, like, hey, I like...
It kicks in.
When I'm, you know, like with my partner, we joke a lot, you know, like... And I try to motivate him because I know, like, even from the look of his face or from the posture of his shoulder when he had a bad day, like, which is every day at work. Like, there's no such thing. I tell him, there's no such thing as a good day. So... get used to this, but we make the best out of it. Oh. And like, yeah.
I think that's a perfect soundtrack to many entrepreneurs' lives. Christel, thank you once
again.
Peter, I really appreciate it.
Thanks.